From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Radio Hour as we move ever closer to the fall. And we're pleased and honored to welcome in Teresa Rogers, the president of St. Francis Catholic High School. Teresa, good morning.
Good morning, Bob. How are you today?
Very good. It's not often I get to talk to the president.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What a blessing for you, huh?
What a blessing for me. I'm going to go home and tell my kids I talked to the president today.
Woo-woo,
see what they say.
Yeah, I'm a legend in my own mind, Bob.
Well, it's so good to speak with you again. The 2018-19 school year underway.
Yeah.
How are things at St. Francis?
Things are so fabulous, Bob. There's so many things to share about all the things that are going on here. We've got 1,080 amazing young women gracing our halls this year. We are the fourth largest girls' Catholic high school in the country.
You're kidding.
Not kidding. We've just recently finished our WASC accreditation. We got the full 6 years.
Now, what is that? Tell us what that is.
WASC is the Western Association of Schools and Colleges that collaborates with WCEA, which is Western Catholic Education Association, and it's a self-study that every school has to go through, and a group of people come out and evaluate you, and they give you, you know, depending upon how you're doing, they give you a number, like a three-year with a midterm visit to follow up on, to make sure that you're following the goals that you've set for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The highest accreditation level you can receive is a six-year without a midterm visit. So we received the six-year clear, which really supports the work that we've been doing the last 5 years with our finance, our curriculum and instruction, the culture, the Catholic perspective that we're weaving into our community, all of those pieces we get basically evaluated on. And so they really patted us on the back for the work that we're doing, and we're so proud of that. Our teachers and our faculty and staff worked really hard on that accreditation. It was about a three-year process to analyze kind of what we're doing and give feedback and put together a huge report for the visiting committee. And they really affirmed the great things that we're doing here. So I'm really proud of that. I'm really proud of our community.
Wow. And so it's equivalent of getting a 4-point.
You know, that's probably a good analogy. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Gee, that's impressive.
Yeah. Yeah.
How long have you been president now, Teresa?
I am just starting my third year.
Wow.
Time flies. I know. I remember being on your show when I first became principal.
Yes.
6 years ago. So
you've been there for all 6 years of this. Well, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we've hired some great people. We've got a great staff. We've got dedicated, just dedicated people in our community. I just came from a freshman parent coffee where we solicited feedback from our parents about their daughter's experiences and their experiences. And the one common denominator that we heard from our parents is that their students, their daughters, are just loving their teachers and really feel supported by their teachers. So we've just got some great people that are here to support our kids, and it just keeps getting better around here. So
is the school growing?
We have grown by about 20 students for the last 3 years. And we really don't want to go over 1,100. I think we've hit our sweet spot. We're only zoned for 1,200. We can't grow much, but we are undergoing a master planning process this year with an architectural firm leading us through this process, gleaning input from a variety of stakeholders to survey how, you know, what people want to see here, you know, next year, 5 years, 10 years down the road. You know, where, do we want a bigger chapel? Do we want to redo Sarah Court? Do we want to add a pool? Where would it go, et cetera? Do we want to get rid of the portables and put a permanent building out there? Just because it's time. I mean, we're almost 80 years old, and there are some things that need to be upgraded. So it's an exciting time.
Who founded St. Francis?
The Franciscans many years ago, and they were back at St. Francis Parish. And the
downtown.
Downtown. Yeah. They were. I think there was a second and third stories were the initial high school, and then they moved over here. They the diocese bought this in. Oh dear, you're asking me about my history. I should know this. But moved over to the new campus, I think about 10 years after they were founded. So, but we've
Always founded it almost the time when Sutter's Fort was still a fort.
1940.
Wow, right before the war. Amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So a rich, rich history of amazing women, 10,000 alums across, alumni across the globe, and just some amazing women that have walked these halls and are doing some great things in our community.
Yeah, you know, sometimes, you know, you'll read about, well, such and such a high school, you know, or college, they've produced X number of U.S. senators or some, you know, some famous names, you know, and they what they don't point out is all the people who aren't famous who are really making a difference in the world.
Amen to that.
Yeah.
You know, mothers, wives, teachers,
right.
Religious. We've had several religious, not several, I would say, you know, close to 100 religious sisters come out of this
over
you know, our time here. And that's a beautiful thing, too. So we don't want to underestimate the power of service. And, you know, that's one of our pillars. You know, we have four pillars, faith, excellence, leadership, and service. And not everybody's going to be famous. We can, you know, we're called to, as Mother Teresa says, to, what does she say? Do extraordinary things. Do
something about.
We can do no great things. Only great. Only things with great love, or something like that.
Yeah,
right?
And she says to do all the little things with great love,
are
just as important as quote unquote doing the big things.
Yeah. I know what it is. We can do no great things. Only small things with great love.
That's right. That's right.
There it is. There it is. I knew it was on the tip of my tongue. So we've got some exciting things coming up here.
Yes.
September 22nd.
Saturday.
We have our annual St. Francis Community Celebration from 3:30 to 7:30. And it's a complimentary event. And we invite all of our students and families, faculty, staff, alumni, community, and neighbors just to, you know, share with us, share the day with us. We've got a barbecue, live band, kids zone, beer and wine garden, and it's just a day to celebrate our mission and our school and come together and just have a lovely afternoon. So this
it's called it's themed Surfs Up.
Surfs Up. Yes, we've always got a theme. Last year it was 80s. I think the year before that we did like a Western theme. So
are we bringing in 40 tons of sand?
Oh, we wish. And the ocean. no, it'll be a nice day. It'll be a really nice day and, you know, fun for all ages. So we hope people will join us for that.
And it's complimentary.
It's complimentary. We would like people to RSVP so we know how much food to barbecue. So they just need to go to our website, stfrancishs.org/celebration, and RSVP for that.
Very good.
Just to make sure we have enough to feed everybody.
And I presume... in October, you're going to have an open house?
We're going to have an open house on October. It's the second Saturday. Let me find. I should.
I think that would be the 10th.
Yes. Excuse me. Sunday, October 14th.
Okay.
12 to 3. Sunday, October 14th, 12 to 3, our open house. It's so funny I'm talking to you. This week, our application window opens.
Oh, okay. Very good.
There's always a couple kids that call and want to be the first ones to apply.
Uh-huh.
So we've had those phone calls this week. So it's open. If people want to apply, they're more than welcome. It's on the website today. So that's good. The other thing that's coming up is, and anybody can come to open house. Oftentimes we've got, you know, girls as young as fourth and fifth grade that show up here because they're planning ahead. So anybody, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth grade, all those families are open, and we do, all those families are welcome, and we've got the RSVP for that on the website as well. So we want to make sure we have enough of our tchotchkes to hand out to our families So we ask people to RSVP for that.
Very good. Teresa, if you have a minute, tell us just a little bit about the community service that all the girls at St. Francis participate in.
So this is a graduation requirement for every student. They are in the following the charism of St. Francis of Assisi, who reached out to the oppressed, the disenfranchised, really reaching out one-on-one. We want our students to have to be in relationship with those they serve. So they'll go to soup kitchens. They will tutor students at some of our, schools who need the extra support. Mm-hmm. And so there's a variety of organizations that we work with that students go to and work with those people in our community, doing Mercy Peddlers. I'm sure your folks are familiar with that. Things like that where they can't just go and do, work at a crab feed at another parish handing out crab. I mean, that's nice to do, but it's really working one-on-one with those most in need. And I think that's what makes our community service program really unique, is our students really get to see firsthand, working one-on-one with these people, the gifts that they can bring and the relationship that they can form with some of the most disenfranchised in our community.
I know it's a cliche, but they learn more frequently than they're able to depart. It's a learning experience as well as a helping experience.
Yeah, exactly. So that's and every year they have to do more hours. So freshman year they have to do 10 hours, and seniors have to do 30 hours. But many, many, many of our students go way beyond that.
Yeah,
they love it. They love it, and get involved in a variety of organizations. And talk about women changing the world. That's what they're doing. One hour at a time, one relationship at a time, and they're doing amazing things in our community.
We're really
proud of them.
Talk about the faculty a little bit. I bet you give people pounding on the door wanting to teach there.
We have great faculty and staff who are here for the mission. It's hard to find people who want to be here for the mission and understand youth culture and have a teaching credential. And there's a lot of pieces that we want. So we're selective, right?
Mm-hmm.
And those people that are here really, give of their time, their talent, and their treasure to be here, quite honestly, and spend a lot of time with our kids. And we will have some openings next year because we have some retirements on the horizon. We'll probably need a math teacher. We'll probably need a science teacher. We'll need a theology teacher. So if any of your listeners out there know anybody, have them send a resume in to our HR person, Gina Vanella.
Mm-hmm.
Math and science are hard positions to find. When local school districts are paying $10,000 bonuses.
Yeah, well, they're hard. They're hard subjects too. In fact, I don't know why you even bothered to teach them because I didn't do very well in them.
And I was an English major, so which has served me well.
Yeah, I know. When I went to college, I didn't realize, high school, things were kind of set out in front of you, and college you could kind of pick. And my whole goal was to pick a curriculum where I didn't have to take math or science.
Yeah, me too.
I was a non-major.
I think the other piece about our faculty and staff is, really in terms of buying into the mission, they go on retreats with our kids,
mm-hmm.
and our kids get to know them on a different plane than they would like at a public school. And teachers share their stories. And they don't become friends. I'm not implying that, but
yeah,
there's a deeper connection.
Sure.
And our kids rave about their teachers. They come back. They visit their teachers. They love them.
Sure.
Because in community, you hear each other's stories. And you love each other because of who they are and their experiences. And you really get to know people well. And, when you pray together, we pray before every class. We pray before every assembly. We worship together. We go to prayer services together. We do adoration together. We go on retreats. And so there's an intimacy that's built because of that spirituality. And it makes for a really beautiful, holy community that we have here. So
you know, it's interesting, Teresa. When you sometimes you'll be seeing somebody who's done something great or whatever, an important person, quote unquote, on TV, and they'll say, how did you get to be? And they almost always they will cite a high school teacher. You know, it was an inspiration to me, or was a, you know, set me on the right path. It's amazing how often you hear that.
Yeah. I mean, I got one of those stories my senior year English teacher. I did not go to private school. I went to public school, but I distinctly remember Mr. Michael Rodriguez sitting in front of this class, and he had just passed out Pride and Prejudice, and we were silently reading, and he was reading too, and I remember him laughing out loud. Reading the first page, and I'm reading it too, and I'm going, what is so funny? And I remember thinking, I want to know what he knows. And that just kind of set me on this, and he was amazing, and he was passionate about his subject. I became an English major when he retired. He reached out to me and said, hey, you want to apply for my job? And so that just kind of set me in this, motion towards education. It was awesome. So yeah, we all have a story like that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I can think back the same thing, just a teacher or two who just really inspired me, and part of it was because I knew what kind of a human being they were too, and it was like I wanted to be like that person because they're a good person.
Exactly.
Well, Teresa, awfully good to talk to you again. The Surfs Up celebration is Saturday, the 22nd, so a week from this Saturday. It's what, 3:30 to
7:30
at St. Francis Catholic High School, right here on Elvis in Sacramento. That's ELVAS.
Yes.
In Sacramento. Yes. Very near. You just go through the tunnel and you're at the Sac State campus.
That's right. Yes, where traffic is always wonderful.
It just flows so smoothly,
doesn't
it?
Oh, yes. Especially on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Crazy around here. They're growing, and it's getting to be quite busy around here. But, we've got a great events going on and great community. And so thanks for letting us talk about our school. I could go on, and I appreciate the time.
Well, we'll look forward to our paths crossing again soon, and we know you're going to have a great celebration on the 22nd.
Thanks, Bob. And October 14th.
And October 14th for the open house.
Yep.
Great. Thanks,
okay,
Teresa.
God bless you, Bob.
Yeah,
thanks so much.
God bless you, too.
Thanks.
That's it's wonderful. Teresa Rogers, the president of St. Francis Catholic High School. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll be joined by Julie Sly, the editor of the Catholic Herald magazine. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Good morning. This is Sister Maria, and I'm the Formation Director for the Seminarians, and you are listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Sister Maria. Thanks for all you do here in vocations and all you've done throughout your career here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Well, Julie Sly joins us, the editor of the Catholic Herald magazine, which we're looking at here with the 940 deacons on the cover.
No, 27.
What a class.
27 new deacons who were ordained last June 30th, I believe. So we did talk a little bit last time about some of the features in the magazine, which people should be receiving this week. I also should put a plug in for that our subscribers will be receiving our annual Catholic when we can't call it the annual Catholic appeal, it's the annual Catholic Herald donation appeal. So you'll be getting a letter from Bishop Soto about that. And anything you can contribute to helping us support the magazine would be appreciated. So you'll probably be receiving that later in September.
Oh, very good.
Yes. So anyway, this issue, September-October, is devoted to permanent diaconate ministry, which we haven't focused on so far in all of our issues as a theme. So I wanted to mention one of the stories is looking at deacons who have served in various ministries, different eras. And one of the deacons we interviewed was Larry Neathemp from St. John the Evangelist Parish in Carmichael. He was ordained in 1985, so he was probably the second class of deacons since our first class was ordained in 81.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been, in ministry 33 years.
Wow.
Oh, no, it says he was a member of the third deaconate class, so I was incorrect on that. And he's worked in the RCIA. I know a lot of outreach and missionary work, a lot of social justice work. He says he's also traveled to Haiti with Food for the Poor, on to El Salvador with Mary Knoll, the International Catholic Mission Movement. He now works a lot with people from the parish and the deanery who are seeking an annulment, and he's an advocate for them walking through that process with them. So, gosh, he's been involved in a lot of things. He's coming up, he says, on his 75th birthday, but he has no, I don't think, intention of scaling back more. So he also serves, I think annulment are the main things he's working on now. He also preaches and says, the deacon is often known among the laity in the sacramental roles of preaching and administering the sacraments, he says. But if we are all to live out the Christian call, we must all serve. He says the whole reason for gathering each Sunday is to leave from the Mass for service.
Mm-hmm.
So another deacon that we featured in our issue was Deacon Jim McFadden. He is from St. John the Baptist Parish in Folsom. I believe he also teaches at St. Francis High School, as I recall. And he also, he's nearing his 75th birthday also. He preaches, offers spiritual formation, adult faith formation, baptism preparation. And he's also been very, very involved in prison ministry because of the closeness of California State Prison Sacramento to their parish. He says he's seen transformation happening. And I love this quote, prison walls do not keep the Holy Spirit out.
They can't.
He says, no.
It's magic.
So, yeah.
No, it's, no, it's, it's funny, you know, we just sort of so accept that. And yet when you think about it, it's like, wow, wait, those are real walls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're real walls. They're designed to keep people in.
Right.
But you can't keep the Holy Spirit out.
No. No, and I know he's inspired many from our past issues on prison ministry, and I know he's inspired a lot of people from St. John the Baptist in Folsom to volunteer in that area.
Well, it's such important ministry.
It is.
It's right
and we have a lot of
Matthew
prisons
25.
In our diocese. We might be maybe second only to Fresno covering the valley. We could probably be the second as far as
number
having
of
number of prisons in in our diocese. So he has taught at St. Francis Catholic High School. Now at the ECL that part-time, but he's taught theology there for 30 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and in, it's in, you know, their whole charism really is charity and service. And you can see that in each one of these deacons and inspiring others to do the same. And then another deacon we profile was ordained more recently, Deacon Gilberto Haas. He's at St. Rose Parish in Sacramento. And he was ordained in 2012. He initially served at St. Christopher Parish in Galt for 5 years, and then he's been at St. Rose for just a little over a year. He says he finds special purpose in working with parents of youth, preparing for First Communion and confirmation. He says, I meet with the parents so they can understand what their children are learning. He also conducts baptism classes for parents and godparents before the sacrament of baptism. He says, I help them to understand their catechism and to know what will occur at Mass. Because we have to remember a lot of people in our parishes, the parents may not be fully informed in their faith enough to really help their kids out. So he says, the 50th anniversary of the permanent diaconate, he believes, signals a time for greater awareness and responsiveness to deacons. People are more open for a prayer or blessing, he says. One of the greatest challenges, he says, comes as a deacon tries to balance family work and ministry. He owns a business and commutes to St. Rose from Galt. He's so funny. He hates to be late. We have made a commitment, he says. And he notes that diaconal ministry often occurs round the clock. He offers the example of late night calls, getting out of bed and visiting someone in the hospital. He says he talks about his ministry, shares regularly with his wife, Maria. Maria and I talk about these things and people open up to us as a couple. I have to live my ministry and show who God is at the parish, at my workplace, and in everyday living. So that's really the hall of the deacon.
Indeed. And the community and your parish, but not just your parish. I'm sure even down in Galt, which is still a small town, you know.
Sure.
People know you're a deacon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So every one of these deacons, you really see them expressing their individuality, but also their common purpose of what the diaconate ministry is all about. And then, I don't know, some people, was it last year or 2 years ago, our deacons had, about a year ago at Lake Tahoe, the deacons gathered for, I think it was the first deacon's convocation ever, with Bishop Soto.
Oh, wow.
And so as a result of that, there were three new committees that came out of that. One, I believe, was on personnel. One is the Deacon Council. The other is on spiritual formation. So they also did a survey of the deacons before they ever met for the convocation. It was a survey by Georgetown University Center for Applied Research in the Apostolate. And I'm sorry, that third committee is called the Deacon Life and Ministry Committee. Then they had listening sessions after the convocation with Bishop Soto, and the story in our magazine talks about the support structure and process that came out after that. The deacons will be meeting at their regular deacon deanery meetings to share their experiences and concerns. They're going to be more involved in personnel matters with the deacons, more involved in planning. And so I think it's been something that has been really thoughtful, fruitful for the deacons to be involved mm-hmm. in this process. And also, Bishop Soto really looks at them as like the frontline people
right.
in their parishes. I mean, I think in the future they're going to be all bilingual. They'll be placed where they're needed in ministry. We talked about that the last
right.
time. Sometimes
right.
a deacon is not necessarily assigned to the parish
right.
not, where they belong.
Not always, for sure. Yeah.
Right. I think the deacons express that they want more frequent communication. On the personnel board, elected members will serve for 3 years and will assist the bishop in the assignment of deacons, implement evaluation procedures, and assist deacons in their service engagement in the diocesan community. So I think they're looking at it as a very, hopeful, forward-looking
process. Oh, yeah. And even though they're not necessarily in their home parish, they're certainly in the area simply because they don't live at the rectory. If they are living in Galt, they're not going to be a deacon in Alturas.
No. Although we do have some that really travel the distances.
Oh, we do. I know you
in
had,
the rural in the rural
had a
parishes.
Piece a year or two ago about
yes.
A deacon up in
Deacon Charles.
Yeah. What,
yeah.
In
who
Fort
lives
Jones
up by
Etna
Happy Camp?
Happy Camp.
Yeah. He lives close to Happy Camp.
I gotta go to Happy Camp yeah. sometime and see why they're all so happy.
Well, I guess you better wait till the fires calm down.
Oh man, isn't it something? You know, we were talking to someone from the Diocese of Santa Rosa about a commemoration they're going to have, ecumenical commemoration.
At Cardinal Newman.
At Cardinal
High
Newman
School.
High School,
yeah.
I think the first Saturday in October. And which is the year anniversary almost to the day. And he said 9 pastors who are coming lost their homes.
Wow.
And of course, much of 80, he said 80% of Cardinal Newman was destroyed.
I was actually coincidentally just there on Saturday for mm-hmm. a bike ride, the Tour de Fuzz.
Oh,
too.
Wow.
And I looked pretty good after having cycled a metric century.
Oh, good. Good. A metric century.
A metric, 62 miles. Yeah. But that's their fundraiser for their law enforcement chaplaincy
yeah.
in the area. And it was actually started in Cardinal Newman, and they've got the campus looking in good
that's
shape.
What
I'm not
he
sure
said,
which buildings they lost. I really couldn't tell from being there. But
how fast that happened. And then, and, you know, I mean, in,
a lot of rebuilding.
On the heels of that, who'd have thought we'd have the car fire and now the Delta fire?
Oh,
and
my gosh.
Which is not even to mention the fire that seemed to burn forever in near Yosemite, not in Yosemite.
Yes.
But, it's just
well, and all the after effects. Just look what Redding and surrounding communities.
I mean,
just I-5 from the
is still
after
closed,
effects
apparently.
Of the smoke.
Yeah,
you know, really, really devastating.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So it's been a real tough couple of years in California.
Yeah. So I didn't want to mention also Bishop Soto has his column.
Very interesting column.
Yeah. Which is called The Role of the Deacon Has a New Missionary Urgency. And the first part of it talks about his assignment. I guess this was his first assignment as a priest at St. Bonaventure Church in Huntington Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about was he a transitional deacon? Yes, at that time. And he talked about helping an elderly priest there, Father Joseph Powers, and he was able to do a lot of the preaching during that time. And he also talked about just the camaraderie that was built. He writes, there's a lot more to being a deacon in the church than assisting during the offering of Mass. Deaconate ministry is particularly charged with the ministry of charity as well as service at the altar. And he talks about the ordination this June, but also he met personally with the candidates and their wives. He says these encounters filled me with the admiration at how they were already embracing the diaconal call to serve the lowly, the lonely, and the lost. Many of them already bring Christ's mercy to minister as well as to those whom they ministered. I'm certain that these encounters of grace will only be enriched by the sacred orders they have received. So, and he talks about the importance of the fraternity among bishops, priests, and deacons. Even more important, the ministerial communion is for the good of the church. It requires patience with one another, persistence by one another, and prayer for one another. So clearly, Bishop Soto really relies on the deacons for a lot. I think we see that ministry continuing to expand.
It's hard now that the diaconate is so much a part of the church here in the Diocese of Sacramento. It's hard to imagine a time when we didn't have deacons, which certainly within my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's
just remarkable to see how many different, I don't know, task is the right word, but how many different functions they perform in the diocese. And it's truly remarkable. And I think that the bishop and the priests, of course, are very, very happy that we have the deacon. I saw, so in one of the stories, the mention of 30,000 deacons worldwide, half of which are in the United States.
Yes. We have a special report.
The United States has really embraced it.
Yeah. And it was interesting in my doing some little research for when our diaconate started here, talking with Monsignor James Hitter, who was the vocation director at that time under mm-hmm. Bishop Bell. I said, "Did Bishop Bell kind of just order you to do it?" He kind of laughed. He said, "No, Bishop Bell just said, go out there to some other diocese and find out what this is all about." He left it up to me.
Interesting.
So when he talked about going to different dioceses.
Do we know where the first
I do not. I do know that with our partner magazine, Faith Catholic in Lansing, I know they just had an article maybe about a year ago of some deacon who was ordained 45 years, still active in our in their diocese. So if we figure our class was, what, the 81, so that was, we were, that's how many years, 37?
Mm-hmm.
So that would have meant they had the diaconate at their first class 8 years
prior
before we did. Yeah. So there's some, I think, Midwest and probably East Coast diocese that went. And it kind of depended on how the diocese was going to implement it, how many years of formation and that. And Monsignor Hitter very much emphasized that they wanted to give people the background on what was the diaconate ministry conceived of originally, why was it being reinstituted.
It would be interesting to see what people in the first classes thought. And then the reality, or even how much the diaconate may have changed since 1981 here in Sacramento, in terms of
certainly the process and the roles they're playing have changed a lot. I mean, the roles of their liturgical roles obviously are going to stay the same, but I think we've seen deacons really branch out beyond that, as we've mentioned, prison ministry, interfaith ministry. Just all kinds of social justice related activities in their parish communities and beyond. There's certainly, you can just think in your mind, just think of how many you've interviewed over the years in different ministries.
There have been ones that I know that are, I guess, informal spiritual counselors. Not in some formal sense.
Necessarily like they've been trained as spiritual directors or anything,
but
they certainly, I think people in the parishes think of them in that. And certainly our pastors, I mean, they play key roles, not only liturgically, but on many many parish pastoral councils, all the finance councils, our pastors realize the significance of relying on lay people and their deacons for their expertise out in the world.
Right.
You know, look at how many different professions deacons come from. It runs the gamut.
Yeah.
Really.
And it brings a real richness to the diaconate in terms of understanding the various problems that people have.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that for the most part, most of them are married.
Most of them are married, raising families, or have raised a family. Yeah, so they know what all the challenges are.
Somebody can say, I'm having problems at work, and the deacon, he goes to work too, you know, understands that. Yeah.
Yeah, you're correct on that. There are 18,000 active deacons in the U.S.
Wow.
And I think there are more than 30,000 in the world. I'm not finding that figure right here, but...
it was somewhere in here.
But yeah, I had it in there somewhere. I'm just not finding
it
right now.
It was in the story about one of the deacons. But I just love looking at the photos of meet your new deacons, and it has a picture of the deacons with their wives. And
I think we have some parishes, too, that are having a deacon for the first time. I don't want to swear on that, but... I don't know, we have Deacon Michael and Haiti Holly. I don't know that there's ever been a deacon at Tahoe City. Maybe there has, but I'm not recalling it in recent memory. Oh, hey, now you're pointing out to me. 30,000 permanent deacons worldwide, and 18,000 of them in the U.S.
Wow.
I wonder why that 60%? Is. I don't know why the whole background on that. Maybe we just also had, maybe we just had more... men who were interested in pursuing it. Maybe it was promoted more. I don't know.
I remember talking to, this was a number of years ago, to someone who said that, and I believe Benedict was Pope then, but possibly John Paul II, and they said that the people in the Vatican are just always amazed about the vibrancy of the American church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just the participation in the American church and the enthusiasm in the American church, you know, that... they don't
know other places in the Western world, Europe, Ireland, even England,
where the church is struggling.
Yeah, the church is really struggling for members.
This is part of it,
I think our phenomenon here is just more how the Catholic population has shifted.
Right.
We have a lot more in the South, a lot more in the Western states, where we have other areas traditionally with ethnic groups of Catholics in the Northeast, maybe some parts in the Midwest. Those places are struggling on how to figure it out. Yep, the close you know, we haven't had really the phenomenon of having to close, except maybe in a rural area or something, but we haven't really had that phenomenon. Of really having to close big inner city churches
the heartache of bishop, the parishioners too, especially the family that's lived there for 60 years, and we've always gone to mass down the street at the little brick church or something. Mm-hmm. You know, that's really hard, but I can imagine how hard it is for a bishop to actually close a parish. It's just,
we've had the phenomenon more of building new parishes and having the struggle of most of them do not build a church building. At first, they build a multi-purpose building that later on might turn. Then later on, they might have mass there, and then maybe later on, they might be able to build a church.
I know several times I've interviewed somebody when we've opened a parish here, and we're actually in the public elementary school. Having mass in the gym.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Anyway, I hope people will read this issue. It's informative for people about deacons, whether they know a lot about deacons or they don't know too much about deacons.
Read Bishop Soto's column about it, because it's very explanatory and really, really interesting, too.
Mm-hmm. So we have our upcoming issue, November, December, is going to be about hopes and dreams of millennial Catholics. So we're going to be interviewing some young Catholics about their views on the church, how they cope with the challenges maybe of young married life. We're going to have a look at a couple of our priests who, they don't call themselves millennial priests, as I interviewed both of them. Father Jeremy Santos and Father Michael Ritter. Mm-hmm. They just happen to be priests of millennial age. How about that?
Have you heard Father Michael Ritter preach?
I have not.
Pretty good.
No.
Pretty good stuff.
Was he at your parish? No, he wasn't. No. Okay. He's right now at St. John the Baptist in Chico, but also does a lot at the Newman Center. Mm-hmm. up there. And we're also, we were talking to five young adult Catholics of various backgrounds. They're going to talk about being a young adult in the church. And also a feature on Radio Santissimo Sacramento and their show that's been going for about 5 or 6 years now, Young Soul, Almahoven, which is in Spanish, which I don't speak.
Very popular show.
Very popular show picked up by EWTN. Worldwide, it's on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 5 to 6. We talked to the two hosts of that show. And interesting, they still say they don't feel that they're really reaching young adults in their audience. But as young adults, they'll listen to AM radio, is what they told me. I guess they're going to be expanding and adding another FM frequency soon, if they may have already. And then they're hoping by the FM frequency, young adults might be switching the dial looking for music and happen on to. I didn't know that, but they know a lot of parents are listening to their show, not necessarily the young adults and teens. So that was interesting.
Well, I have four teenagers, and I can't remember the last time they turned on the radio.
Really? Because they're using their iPhones or other gadgets?
Yeah, whatever it is.
They're listening to music?
There's about 400. Yeah, they're listening to music.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But they're not going to turn on the news on AM radio?
No.
Okay. They don't hear about the traffic
on
I-80.
They're not going to listen to the John McGinnis show on KFBK. John McGinnis was at the keynote at the Bishop Gagin's dinner and gave a wonderful talk.
Yeah. Great. Okay, well, I hope people will enjoy this issue. And also, we'd be grateful if you would support us in our appeal.
How do they do that again? Do they get a postcard?
You will, if you're receiving the magazine, you will get a letter in the mail from Bishop Soto and an envelope just talking about Catholic Herald magazine. And we invite you just to support at whatever level. We love small donations, large donations, whatever. It helps us keep going for the year. So we send that out once a year. If you're not receiving the magazine and you want to receive it, I would say look on our website, scd.org, and click on Catholic Herald Magazine. Or you can call the Catholic Foundation office directly at 916-733-0266.
Very good. And so, what are you working on for your next edition?
The issue on Hopes and Dreams of Millennial Catholics.
Yes.
So, and then February will be about Catholic education. But I can't tell you yet what the stories are because we're still figuring that out. And I'm always looking for good faith stories. You can email me at jsly@faithcatholic.com.
That's S-L-Y.
Yeah, S-L-Y. Not too many people have that name, so it's an easy one. And but I'm always looking for suggestions, and a lot of times we can't always act on writing a story immediately, but I do keep kind of an active story file, so if people want to suggest someone in their parish, someone they know, I'm always open to that.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. And so, you have to plan way ahead.
A few months ahead. Yeah. Actually, we'll be going in the layout with our December issue around September 20th and finish around October 10th. So we do have to be thinking ahead. Our more day-to-day news, people need to go on the website or social media. We have a pretty active social media presence. By my co-worker, BJ, he's working on that aspect of things. But the website is always good for just day-to-day news that we don't necessarily include in the magazine. Announcement of events, statements from Bishop Soto on various issues, events coming up perhaps a month from now, or, sometimes they're in the magazine, but sometimes we don't have notice, then they're just on the website.
Right.
Yeah.
Very good.
So, good.
Julie, it's a wonderful edition, and it's, we didn't talk about Father Murphy's column.
Oh, Father Murphy's column.
Monsignor Murphy.
about his Biz sent to Ireland this year. He took a 10-day tour of Ireland. He's actually in Mexico right now on a tour. But
50th anniversary?
It was his 50th anniversary at the priesthood. He had a celebration earlier this year, I believe, at the cathedral. And, you know, we all hear
it. In June.
In June. And he sent on his journey to Ireland. He sent, you know, a lot of things have changed, obviously. The National Seminary of Maynooth, once the largest seminary in the world, with the capacity for more than 400 students, is projected to only have 25 seminarians or less in the coming year. But he thinks the Irish people are going to bounce back with Catholicism. He says, for all their anger at bishops and priests and the decline in mass attendance, the Irish people continue to be deeply Catholic, almost despite themselves. He mentions penitential pilgrimages to traditional places, monastic sites. Novenas are also still popular. And people will still cite who their patron saint is. He says the ages-old faith of the Irish people will not disappear as readily as some people think.
I think he's right.
Yep.
And I certainly pray he's right.
Yeah.
But it is, you know, it's a difficult time in Ireland. It's a difficult time right now in the United States.
Yes.
You know, it's a difficult time for the church. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to soldier through it.
Yeah. You know, I know you've had Bishop Soto on. We do have his statements on the website that he's made recently about some of the things going on in the church in the U.S. And thoughtful article yesterday by Marcos Breton in the Bee interviewing Bishop Soto. And his people missed that.
In the Sunday Bee. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Very good.
Good. Well, thank you for the time.
Yes, Julie, this is a...
And I'll join you again with our next issue comes out.
I can't wait.
Okay.
Thanks so much. That's Julie Sly, editor of the Catholic Herald magazine. And a couple of... reading all about the deacons is great, but read what Bishop Soto has to say about the diaconate. Very, very interesting stuff. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley & Associates. Underwriting for the Bishop's Hour is provided by Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services, a ministry of the Diocese of Sacramento. As a church-owned nonprofit founded in faith, Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services is dedicated to providing education, support, and resources during life's most difficult moments. They will make every effort to enable you to realize your final wishes while empowering families to make completely informed decisions. You can give them a call. They are at 855-525-2285. That's 855-525-2285. We're also brought to you by a generous grant from Christine Cipperly, marriage and family therapist. If you're looking for help with family or personal problems, if you'd like help from someone with a Catholic point of view, someone who understands the importance of marriage and family and affirms the dignity of every human life, Christine Cipperly is a trained and experienced counselor of married couples, families, and individuals. She can work with you on your marriage, your parenting, or your individual struggles in a way that will not violate our faith. Christine is a wonderful, wonderful therapist. Give her a call. She's at 530-400-4757. That's 530-400-4757. We'd like to thank Christine Cipperly and Catholic Cemeteries and Funeral Services for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening, everyone. God bless. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Greetings. This is Bishop Jaime Soto from the Diocese of Sacramento inviting you to join Ministry Days 2018 in the footsteps of the beloved disciple. Join me on September 28th and 29th at St. Francis High School for the largest gathering of ministers, catechists, and Catholic school teachers in our diocese. This is an excellent opportunity to network with others who serve our parishes and schools and who are co-workers with Jesus in building up the kingdom in this part of the Lord's vineyard. You can find more information at ministrydays.com. Again, that's ministrydays.com. May God bless you as you walk in the footsteps of the beloved disciple following our Lord Jesus.
Well, here I am in a river of questions. Can I pour my heart out to a listening ear? Well, I see this life, it's valleys and mountains, and I think of all the roads that brought me here. Oh, that brought me here. Walking down, walking down the road. Well, I've questioned my reasons, this life I'm living. I question my ability to judge wrong from right. Well, I questioned all the things I've ever called certain, my race, my religion, my country, my mind. But the one thing I don't question is you. You really love me like you say you do. You really love me like you say you do. So I've questioned significance, meaning, and relevance. Does the work I'm doing really matter at all? Well, I question my friendships, alliance, dependence. Who will still be here when I fall? But the one thing I don't question is you. You really love me like you say you do. Yeah, the one thing I don't question is you. You really love me like you say you do. So hold me, come on now, hold me, how, hold me, come on, I need your love. Yeah, the one thing I don't question is you. You really love me like you say you do. So hold me. Hold me. I'm lost without you. Hold me. Come on. Hold me. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I don't question.